www.positivemind.org. I'm Michael G. Haskins. Coming up next, The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille.
Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Did you ever get confused about who's the right mate for someone to choose? Right? It's quite a question. We like people who are self-confident. But how self-confident is self-confident? A recent article in the New York Times is kind of interesting by Maureen Dowd. She said, whom not to marry was in the article. And she said the following, never marry a man who has no friends. She said, this usually means he will be incapable of the intimacy that marriage demands. And people, men who have no friends, are very difficult in a marriage. Sometimes your friends can't render an impartial judgment because they're envious of you, beating them out. But having friends is very important. How about, does he use money responsibly? There's an important question. Is he stingy? Most marriages that founder do so because of money. See, he's thrifty, she's thrifty, he's on his 10th credit card, that kind of thing, money problems in between. They also said, steer clear of someone whose life you can run. Never makes demands counter towards yours. Be careful, because if you're somebody who tends to get away with things by dominating your mate, eventually he gives in to you completely and no doormat stays a doormat for a long time. They eventually get their revenge. Is he overly attached to his mother and her mythical apron strings? There's another one. When he wants to make a decision, does he, like where you should go on your honeymoon, does he consult with his family or does he consult with you? Choices. Does he have a sense of humor? There's another good question about your mate, your prospective mate, a sense of humor. What if you have a mate who doesn't have a sense of humor? Imagine that. Imagine somebody who doesn't make anything funny, who doesn't have a sense of irony. Does he speak? Does he talk? Having somebody who never talks, who's very silent, another difficult thing. Does he possess the character traits that add up to a good human being? The willingness to forgive. Does he have that? The willingness to praise. The willingness to be courteous. Well, these are the kind of questions that came up. But along with those questions came the question about the self-contained man, who seems so attractive to so many people. Give me somebody who could really stand up on their own, who's very strong, and that's what I'm looking for, say many a woman and many a man. Many a man is searching for a woman who is very powerful and strong so he could kind of lean on her. You know, he's afraid of the one who's going to lean on him. Now, how do you distinguish between somebody who is a good person who could share life but has a lot of self-confidence and someone who is selfish? Selfish. What a funny word that is. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5. Selfish. Selfish. Remember when you were a kid? If you were playing with something and your mother was got annoyed with you, she'd say, don't be selfish. What did that mean? Did that mean, what does it mean to a kid to be accused of selfishness? share your toy with Billy. Why? What do you think a child's mind does when a parent says, don't be selfish? Does the child understand that? What is selfish? And what happens to adults? At what point will you be considered a selfish person? When you're taking care of yourself? I am me and you are you, and I'm not in this world to live up to your expectations, and you're not in this world to live up to mine. I live for myself, you live for yourself. That kind of theory, you know, that came out of the 60s and 70s. Selfish, I serve my own pleasure. And if you fit into it, that's good for me. I'm my own kind of man. Selfish. Selfish people have hundreds of different traits and different ways of displaying their selfishness. We're all selfish to some degree. It's called self-preservation. We want things. We want to be liked. We want to be respected. The difference between healthy selfishness and just plain selfishness is the ability to put someone else in the picture now and then, other than to use them. You see, a selfish person, in the negative sense, doesn't have room for anybody else. It's all about them. And the only thing that people are there for is to use them in some way or other. The selfish person feels overly entitled to a perfect life. They feel a need to be seen and heard more than other people do. They crave more attention. They're somehow oblivious to what other people are saying, needing, or giving. 9 times out of 10, the first indication of a selfish person is self-absorption. Now, what is self-absorption? What's different than self-promotion? A person can promote themselves and not be selfish. Self-respect, a person could respect themselves and not be selfish. Or self-admiration, it's okay. You could admire yourself and not be selfish. Self-absorption is tunnel vision on yourself and your own needs. If you don't feel threatened when attention is given to someone else, then you're not self-absorbed. Self-absorption is everything is about me. If you ask somebody an opinion and you truly hear what they have to say, if you can listen to someone else's problems, story, and memory without having to turn the subject back to you. Did you ever meet those kind of people? You tell them something and they say, oh, yes, I. Right? If you're okay letting other people win now and then, and if you're humble about your own mistakes and sincere when you wish someone else success, and probably paramount to it all, if you're willing to give a try, to try harder to reach compromises with people. See, if you're willing to reach compromises, then you're not selfish. Selfish is a real tough thing. People who are selfish are deprived people. They have a sense of deprivation. It comes from deprivation, you know? Think about it. I remember when I was a kid, we would have family dinners. And there were family dinners where people had very little money. And so a common dish was pasta. Now, the pasta was made with a thin tomato sauce because there wasn't much money for a heavy tomato sauce. And the pasta was ranzoni. It was readily available pasta. And so it was cooked. And that was it. That was all the food there was. And I remember sitting around tables with lots of people. And pasta was served, and the real prize was the grated Parmesan cheese. Yep, it was that grated Parmesan cheese that made the difference between whether this dish was going to be edible or just passable. And so people would grab for the cheese. And that was the question now. There was only one jar of it. It came in a jar. Who was going to be selfish about their use of the cheese? Because everybody would eat the whole container. They just throw it in their pasta and mix it up. So the concept of sharing comes from Parmesan cheese. That's where it comes from among poor Italian families. How about somebody who's hypochondriacal? You know, if somebody's worried about their well-being to a point where all they care about is there's no dust on me, 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 I have to shut the windows so pollution doesn't get on me. I have to be careful because of me. I have to eat the right foods because of me. And it's like you become so afraid of getting sick that you're totally obsessed with yourself. Would one say that obsessions in general are selfish? Well, let's think about it. Obsessive compulsive neurosis, hand washing, door locking, checking, you know, all those symptoms. Isn't that a symptom of kind of a panic survival? If you get somebody who's got a fear of heights and they're standing on a fear, if they're phobic, and there are people who are standing around but they're afraid of heights, they're likely to push other people over the edges. Because in a phobic state of mind or an obsessive state of mind or a compulsive state of mind, you lose track of everybody else. How about during drug addiction? Drug addiction is the same thing. Drug addiction is a selfish state of mind. When you know that you have to get your drugs, you want to go get some heroin, you have no way of getting it except stealing the money from the church. You know, people steal statues, sell the statues, get a dollar for a statue, and then they go buy drugs for it. So at any point that you become compulsive, you lose track of other people. Where does all this come from? This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're talking about selfishness and where selfishness comes from. And not, you know, it's not just judgmental. I mean, selfish people are truly sad. However, believe it or not, they are admired in society. When we see somebody who stands up and looks very proud and kind of, you know, looks down on people, in a way they're admired. Oh, look at them, like movie stars, like, you know, rock stars. Now, what's the opposite of selfishness? Altruism. Altruism is selfless concern for the welfare of others. It is a traditional virtue in many cultures and central to most religious traditions. The idea is described as the golden rule of ethics. Altruism is the opposite of selfishness. This is Armand DeMille with The Positive Mind. Now, what about egotism? Egotism is the motivation to maintain and enhance favorable views of the self. Egotism means placing oneself at the center of one's world with direct concern for no others. So egotism and selfishness kind of go well together. If you wonder where it all comes from, think of children. A child says, I want, give it to me, buy me. And they seem to demand. Some children feel owed or entitled to get their way, which is normal for a child to ask for what he wants. Some children are overly demanding and needy. They may not have learned to balance taking from others with giving. They view other people as existing merely to give to them. Some grown-ups see the world the same way. Your only job here is to give to me. For some children, the behavior may be a stage they're going through and they grow out of. For example, two-year-olds constantly seek and explore the environment. Demanding that their needs be met is one of the ways that two-year-olds develop a dependence. It's one of the ways they find out if their needs are going to be met or not. The terrible twos. You know, the children aren't out there, they're demanding. And then they learn there are certain frustrations and they go through it. Another phase comes up during adolescence. Teenagers are notoriously known for requiring the best of everything. You know, teenagers get this sense of, I've got to have the best Nike shoes. I've got to have the best of this and the best of that. And my entire identity is whether I have the best or don't have the best. Some young people during their teen years, they go through the stage, but it's only a stage. Another event that causes a child to engage in more entitlement behavior is divorce. When two parents get divorced, a kid kind of looks and they feel desperate. They lost a father. They lost a mother. Even though the mother and father are going to be somewhat at a distance, They're going to have one or the other. They play you against each other. They demand things. And they find the love of the missing parent through the gifts that the parent gives them. So they make demands. I know a woman who, until, she's 60 years old now and still makes demands, made demands of her father until the day he died, her divorced father, as if she was punishing him. She wanted him to support her. She wanted him to give her money. He wanted her to leave her his money instead of giving it to his new wife. All of this stuff. And it was like it's all as a result of the divorce. The child finds that they can manipulate the parents this way. And so that selfishness and being owed, it's almost like I got the wrong end of the stick and now the world owes me in some kind of way. And a lot of these kids go through life as adults angry. They have a chip on their shoulder. It's what I call the nasty personality. Yes, nasty personality. Diagnostically, as a clinician, nasty personality. Did you ever meet one of them? People with a chip on their shoulder? Nasty. Chip on your shoulder is like you seem to be angry at everybody. That no matter what happens, chip on your shoulder is an expression that comes from, here, knock this chip off my shoulder. It's a state of arrogance. You see, it's like, I've got this good, I dare you. And a person walks around arrogant. And this kind of arrogance is there, and it's kind of all the time daring you to do something to them. Well, people who have this sense of entitlement have this sense that, I dare you. You must give to me. You owe me. The roots of a preoccupation with your self-involvement can be a whole bunch of things that come out of childhood. Not having enough as a kid, that's one. Well, we want to take your calls about this today. I want to take your calls about selfishness, about expectations, about things like that. Sometimes a person's selfishness is a disguise against their own shame. Now get this concept. It's a very interesting concept. The original self has become fractured. The results of this is a way of interacting to keep yourself from feeling, the way you keep yourself from feeling anything. The real self shuts down. And now you have this other self that's demanding all the time. What does that have to do with shame? If you ever got underneath the demanding self, you would find a person who feels very shameful. In working in therapy with people who have this narcissistic kind of self-entitlement personality, we usually have to break through to get to the real personality under that defended, demanding personality, to get to that. And what usually is exposed is a sense of shame that the person has, as if there is something wrong with them, as if there is something wrong that they did. Think about it. You think you're a broken child? Did you ever have the feeling that there was something wrong with you, basically deep down? And then you hide from that awareness and you hide from that and you cover it up, and you could cover it up with arrogance so well. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're going to be taking your calls today because tomorrow starts our fundraising. Yes, or should I say fundraising here at WBAI. Fundraising. We have a special Freedom of Thought fundraising special dedicated to George Carlin, who cut his teeth here at WBAI with the seven deadly words. And the station is going to do a special for a week because we need to raise money. And it's summer and everything is more expensive and we need your help. So while we're doing this, we won't be able to take many of your calls. So today I want to take your calls at 212-209-2900. Let's look at what happens to, as we're waiting for your calls to come in, let's look at what happens to children when they are, when they have this kind of selfish attitude. What else goes along with it? One is mood switching. A child who is generally, has a sense of entitlement and is selfish is usually caught in mood swings. They can either become very elated when they get what they want or very depressed and arrogant when they don't get what they want. So mood swings is a sign of it. Poor impulse control and frustration tolerance is another sign of somebody who is arrogant in that kind of way. Selfish. They can't stand the frustration of not getting what they want. Well, frustration is part of life. It's okay. You don't get what you want all the time. If you can't always get what you want, you sometimes get what you need, right? Poor ego boundaries and a need for control. Somebody who is a selfish person generally tries to control everything. You know, one of my assistants, or my assistant mentioned that there's a thing about being selfish, about really being so self-contained, is you lose access to other people's imaginations. So in a way, it's kind of a boring life. If you have everything under control, everything is exactly the way you know it to be. So there's a lack of imagination. Ego boundaries and lack of ego boundaries means that when you need something desperately, you step over wherever you have to step over to get it. If it means you're going to walk into somebody's room unannounced to get what you need, you'd have a feeling that you're almost entitled to do it. If you step ahead of the line when you go into a movie theater, you know, instead of going online, you just go right ahead and you go right through the middle. Other signs of what goes on with people who are selfish people is denial of uncomfortable feelings. They don't like admitting to their uncomfortable feelings. And the uncomfortable feelings are sadness. They don't like to admit to that. They would rather be angry, arrogant. Frequent anger and rage outbursts. You know, a frustrated person is like a frustrated animal. They could become rageful and you could see the outrage every now and then. The need for admiration becomes prominent. You could see the person looking to be admired, looking to get some kind of comments. So this is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. We're going to be going more into this a little later. But let's take one of your calls at 212-209-2900. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Yes.
Hello there.
Yeah, how you doing? I was just reading this article in the New York Times a few minutes ago, rather. They're talking about how these scientists are using mirrors to understand human...
Yes, it was a fascinating article.
I just started reading. I didn't finish it. You know, it's funny. I brought it up because what happens is when I drink sometimes, like if I drink alone, I find myself looking at the mirror.
What do you see? Do you see a friend? Or do you see a stranger?
Yeah. I tend to talk to myself. I would have to say a stranger.
A stranger.
Yeah.
See, that's the thing. That's the thing that happens. You're trying to find that stranger. And you look in the mirror and you say, where are you, you know? Where are you? And you can't find it. And the alcohol doesn't bring you there. But it's like you're searching for something.
Really? That's interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi there. You're on the air.
Hello, Armand.
Hello.
I have a quick question.
Sure.
I actually would like some advice on how to deal with it because I have a close family member who's exactly what you described, a distant, selfish, the whole thing, and it's actually driven a wedge between us.
And who is this in your family?
It's a cousin, a very close cousin.
You have a close, what's your name?
Anthony.
Anthony, see, you have a close cousin, and this is a cousin, a man or a woman?
Man.
A man, and you've been close to him for many years. But his selfish behavior has kind of gotten to you to a point where it's driven a wedge between the two of you, right?
Yeah, and it's kind of difficult to explain. Not necessarily selfish in a in a monetary way, but just with time and feeling. He's just very cold and distant, and he just kept himself separate from the family, sort of, for no apparent reason.
From the whole family, so he must have felt like he would have gotten swallowed up by the family. When you were a kid, was he an older cousin?
No, about the same age.
About the same age, and he was your buddy?
Very close.
And so something happened where you represent the family, and he represents the rebel. So he's separated from the entire family, and in separating from the family, he has to separate from you, Anthony, because he sees you as representing the family.
I kind of got all of that, you know, from your explanation. It was very, very on the money. But my question is, it sort of created distance, and now I feel resentment towards him, and I've just left it alone, and then all that's happened has been years of, you know, very little contact. And how do you break that?
Okay, the way you break it is you speak to him and you say, oh, first of all, I'll tell you, when you were kids, how old are you, by the way?
36.
You're 36. Where did you grow up?
In Manhattan.
In Manhattan, good. So you know what a Spalding is?
Absolutely.
You know what a Spalding is, right? You got to send him a Spalding.
It's very funny.
It's a great idea. What?
We played a lot with the Spalding.
Of course you did. Bring him a Spalding, and I think if you can't get one, call me, and I'll send you one. I have a box of them.
All right.
Right? Because what you need to do is get beyond being a representative of the family. You got to be the kid in the streets. You see, you got to be the kid who plays box ball, who plays off the porch. What was it called?
Stoop ball,
and off the curb, right? Right behind the Chevy,
mm-hmm.
Right? Or it's up on the gutter and the roof, from all the way out there. That's your buddy.
That's a great you know, example. And my area where I struggle with is that I kind of want to mention this, not attacking. I don't want to attack, but I just don't want to hurt his feelings.
So
know?
Don't talk about the family. Promise him you're not going to mention the family. Promise him that. Say, let's get together and go play some curveball, a stoop ball. Let's go. I'm going to bring it. You know, I'll get a stickball bat, and we'll go play in the streets. And I promise I won't mention the family. And nobody could turn down a Spalding.
He might not go for that. I mean, he's like you said before, you know, very prim, proper.
Where does he live?
In Manhattan.
You go show up on his doorstep with a Spalding. I'm telling you, don't be so afraid.
Yeah, I just don't want to hurt his feelings.
Won't hurt his feelings. You'll probably open his heart. You know?
All right.
Now you're going to call me back and report to me, right?
Yeah.
All right, I'll be listening.
Thanks.
Right.
Spalding guy.
Spalding guy. For those of you who don't know, the Spalding was a ball that was around Manhattan many years ago. It was stopped being made. Recently, somebody brought it back, so it's available in a couple of shops. And it's the inside of a tennis ball. Unique here in Manhattan, in New York, Boston, Philadelphia, but it wasn't in the rest of the world. But it was such a part of our culture. Every kid knew what it was. It was like you carried one around. It was your friend. You used to bounce it off the wall laying in bed. It was an important thing. So it is definitely a healing tool. That plus psychotherapy, the Spalding is cheaper. This is Armand Mill with you. With the Positive Mind, we're going to take a short break. I'll play you a little music as usual. And then when we get back, we will continue with your phone calls and this discussion about selfishness. Be back with you shortly.
Hi, this is Eric Anderson.
This is Wolsey Pimentel.
You're tuned to WBAI.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen? This is LL Cool J.
This is Dave Marsh.
Hi, this is Tony Bennett.
Hi, this is Julie Cruz from New York City, and you're listening to
WBAI FM.
The soundtrack of New York City.
Non-commercial and with no additives. We're listener-supported.
I don't listen to the radio.
I don't like stuff that sucks.
You talking to me?
I love this radio station.
You talking to me?
Yo, this is G Love on WBAI, New York, New York.
Three, two.
In your mind, in your mind, one foot on Jacob's ladder and one foot in the fire, and it all goes down in your mind. Living at the bottom of the stairs of life, never a smile knocking on your door. The air is blue and so are you, prehistoric monsters on the floor. Last verse of your last song, God don't hear dead men. The end of the line is in your mind, and you'll be staying in your mind,
in your mind,
in your mind,
in your mind.
Bone for bone and skin for skin, eye for eye and tooth for tooth, heart for heart and soul for soul. Somebody said, what is truth? Lock it up and close it down. The sound of mourning like a dove, high beyond the rattling roar. Look into the face of love. In your mind,
in your mind,
in your mind,
in your mind, it all goes down
in your mind. One foot on Jacob's ladder. Fundamentalist pie, but just a piece, you understand. You get the rest up in the sky. Praise and glory, wounded angels shuffling round the room. Eternity is down the hall, and you sit there bending spoons in your mind,
in your mind,
in your mind,
in your mind.
Father, Son, and Holy Ghost, sacrificial drops of pain on a silver-plated cross, sanctification on a chain. They say redemption draweth nigh, but storms of silence from above. Stop your ears and close your eyes, try to find the face of love. Jacob's ladder and one foot in the fire, and it all goes down in your mind, in your mind,
in your mind,
in your mind,
in your mind.
It all goes down in your mind. One foot on Jacob's ladder and one foot in the fire, and it all.
Johnny Cash, In Your Mind. From the Dead Man Walking album, this is Armand DeMille with you at the Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM. We're taking your calls here at WBAI 212-209-2900. We're talking about selfishness. You know, selfishness in children, when it appears, there are ways of dealing with it. And some of the ideas of how you deal with selfishness in children also can help you in dealing with someone you love who becomes very selfish or very self-involved and doesn't consider your needs. You know, like sometimes you got really heavy needs and you feel like your needs just can't be met. So the only thing you could do is disappear, you know, fade out. You know, sometimes you just ask for your needs instead. Say, hey, I need to put my head down and rest. Is that okay? You know, you ask for your needs and you get your needs instead of resenting them for not giving you what you need or disappearing. Children, the hope for the self-involved child. If you have a child, you're trying to train them, to remediate them in some way, and how they perceive the world. Imagine if you could talk to a kid and say the following thing. Imagine if this were possible. You feel that your needs aren't being met. I wonder why you get so angry when you don't get what you want. Why do you get so angry? Having to stay in make you unhappy? You know, is that it? What's another choice you can make instead of insisting you get your way? You only insist you get your way, so what's another way? Maybe get angry to avoid the other feelings that you have. Like, you know, you want to go out and play and you feel helpless and you feel frustrated. Maybe that's it. Maybe you just want to scream instead. I understand. It's not a big deal. Big deals are when your parents are screaming at you or when we're hitting you or leaving you or you're becoming nervous like when your parents fight. Those are big deals. Little deals are not getting your own way. Not getting your own way is a little deal, not a big deal. You don't have to get angry over little deals. What could you tell yourself to let this go so you could feel happy? To let this moment go. Yes, you cannot go out and play at midnight with your friends. What could you do to let this go so that you're not miserable? It's sad to see a smart person like you talking to a child so angry all the time. Wouldn't you like to say that to some people you know? Think about some people you know who get angry a lot. What do you like to say to them? You know, it's sad to see somebody like you getting mad all the time. I know somebody who gets mad every week at somebody new. You know, she just gets mad at somebody over something, over nothing. And what is it over? It's over their idiosyncratic behavior. But, you know, getting angry means one thing. It means that somewhere you have a feeling hidden inside. You get angry when you don't get what you want, but how does that really hurt you? So the idea is to handle the bad feelings inside that go on when you don't get what you want. It's not just about demanding what you want and feeling bad because you don't get it. Think about your own lives, my friends. How many times in life have you wanted something and not gotten it? How did you learn to handle it? How did you learn? What was that process? What did it take you to do? And that was part of your maturity. Yet there are many people I know who still to this day, if they don't get what they want, they are just absolutely furious. Furious. They're fit to be tied. And unfortunately, those people never succeed. They can never keep jobs. You know, they can't work for anybody else. They can't work cooperatively. They can't stay in marriages. They terrorize their kids. You know, the kids get scared of them. This is Armand DeMille, 212-209-2900. Remember, you got to share the grated cheese. Let's take one of your calls. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the air. Hello there.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Oh, great. I love this subject. It's so timely, particularly in my family. My name is Laura, and I live in Westchester.
Hi there, Maura.
Hi. So one thing about the Spaldings, I mean, I try to explain to my kids about what it was like to play handball. I grew up in Far Rockaway, and that's what we did was play handball. And you put on those gloves. Remember the gloves so the middle of your palm wouldn't get, you know...
No, we came from Manhattan. We didn't use gloves.
Oh, well, okay. So sorry about that one. But anyway, that did. I could smell the ball now, you know.
Well, you know, Maura?
Laura,
yes. Tell you something. It'll bring back such memories you can't believe it. You call me and leave your address, and I'll make sure you get one.
Oh, listen, it's just, I can smell it now.
You can smell it. I understand.
All right. Listen, so here's the thing. I was on my way to a meeting, and I heard, turned the radio on in the car, and here you come talking about this self-entitlement, you know, the selfishness, and this thing about hiding from it through arrogance. And I was like, oh, my God. I said, I'll never get to hear the rest of the program. So I go home. And so here I am. I called. I said, I know I'll not get through, but I'm going to try. I have a 20-year-old daughter. Yeah, I'm not going to say her name, but she's in college. And I don't know what it is about this feeling of entitlement, this feeling of, you ask them to do something, and it's like, well, do I have to do it now? You know, like, well, I was getting ready to go, you know. I'm like, well, wait a minute. I'm like, hold on a second. You know, you're not suffering. You know, you're not living a horrible life here. What's the problem with me asking you? You know, and so I had this conversation with a girlfriend, and we talk about this, and we say, like, what is it with these kids today? They have this sense of entitlement, this sense of, and these are not, you know, these are not rich kids. You know, these are not kids who have had everything growing up. It just seems to be this generation. Is it a generational thing?
It seems like an extension of the adolescent generation in many kids. You know, it seems like the kids are more... Well, first of all, where's the child's father?
Oh, he's here.
Uh-huh.
Oh, we're together. We've been together for 23 years.
So you've been together for 23 years. Has your daughter ever played the two of you against each other as to getting what she wants?
Nope. Because you know what? It's not that she wants something. It's that she doesn't want us to bother her.
Yeah, adolescence is that way. You see, adolescence is me-ism. They once said that if you wanted to understand a psychopathic mind, study an adolescent. Because the adolescent is all about meanness.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it's all about me. It's about me. It's about her. It's about all I care about is me. It's very hard to engender this kind of consideration, the altruistic self. It's very hard to be there unless they see it. Now, it sounds like you're the kind of person who would demonstrate it, but it sounds like among her friends, they're really about me-ism, you know? And I think it's something that she would either grow out of or she's going to get into deep trouble with.
Well, that was my next question. So, okay, she's 20, so she's a few years past adolescence now, so... How much longer are we waiting? I mean, the bottom line is, you know, I say this.
Well, she's still being taken care of by you guys. She's in college, right?
Absolutely. And I never use that as a threat. Like, I'm taking care of you. We pay the bills.
Yeah,
you want to go
understand.
To school next semester? You that. No, I don't go there. I'm very calm. And I, you know, and I say, you know, it's one thing to be, you know, you don't feel like talking. You want to be arrogant. But, you know, we all have to play as a team here. This is the house team. And this is the part that you play. And if you can't do that, then we're going to have problems.
And
then
so
usually
she
after that kind of conversation, she kind of,
So what about the conversation I said a little earlier, Laura, asking her, listen, what are you really feeling about this? What are you really feeling with me?
Yeah.
What about stepping it down?
Me. Yeah, yeah. Because I think there's something else.
I think there is, too.
I think there is. I think with college and the whole social scene, I think something else is going on. But between the internet and the email and the texting, people don't call landline anymore.
Yeah, I understand.
So, you know, it's hard to get a handle on, you know, what
Well, I'm sure you're reflecting a lot of the frustration that many parents feel nowadays.
Yes.
With their separation from their children who seem to feel so superior in many ways.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I agree, but... I so thank you for taking my call and listening to me and let me express this feeling. I'm so delighted that I got through to you.
I'll see you on the with a stickball bat.
Yes, for sure. Bye, Armand.
You know, you make a stickball bat. So if you had a Spalding the way you made a bat, you get a mop. And you get a mop, and you'd have to get an old mop that somebody threw away, of course, because you wouldn't use a good mop. and you'd have to break it in a certain way. Some people broke it in the sewer, and other people broke it over a fence. And you break, you get a crisp end, and you wrap it up with black electrical tape, and that was your bat. And so you had a bat and a Spalding ball. It was an amazing thing. 212-209-2900, Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, you know, once again, it's amazing how off base you are, and it was so pleasing to me to be after that woman. You know, what she really is saying is, I want you to do this for me, and you don't want to do it. So instead of you taking and asking her, why is she asking her daughter to do stuff, you said, yeah, there must be a problem with the daughter, because the daughter's asserting her independence, saying, I don't want to do it right now.
Oh, that's what you heard.
What?
That's what you heard.
That's what I heard. The daughter doesn't want to do it right now, and the mother doesn't like the fact that she doesn't want to do it right now.
Well, what a good perception.
And, of course, instead of looking at what might be going on with her, oh, no, it's something going on with her social scene, something going on with college. No, it's not. She's growing up, and she's independent, and she doesn't want to do what you want her to do. And as for, you know, not being entitled, what, the world is a vicious place. I didn't play with ball games. We played war, and we played war every single day. So I'm not sure what the hell you're talking about when you talk about playing Spalding and all that.
Well,
nonsense.
Let me ask you something. Hold on a second.
Yeah, go ahead.
Does it make you very angry?
Now what?
Are you angry right now?
Well, yes. And the world makes you angry.
Okay, so angry. Wait a minute. The world made you angry?
Yes.
So I could hear. So you see, now here we are in the same situation. So you have this right to be angry because the world made you angry.
That's right, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, instead of people like you who always say that anger is bad emotion, or it shouldn't be this, or there's feelings behind feelings. No, there's only one feeling, and the feeling is anger. And unfortunately, people don't like dealing with anger. They don't know how to handle it.
Yeah.
Well, it's a nation of sheep.
Well, how do you get along? I mean, you get along well in the world?
Who knows?
You can't get along well because you're an angry guy.
How do you know whether I get along, whether or not I get along?
Because you sound very
funny,
angry.
Charming right now.
Yeah, because
maybe I'm a very funny, charming person, Armand. You know, maybe I'm the kind of person who can, you know, fool people.
Yeah, that would be a good way to get along. To be the kind of person who could just fool people because you're angry.
Well, it's better than sitting on a throne and dispensing wisdom about people's psychological problems.
You know, I think you could easily.
Not being funny like Frasier.
Thank you. What's your name, by the way?
I'm not going to tell you that.
Oh, come on. Be proud of yourself.
Bye, Armand.
Bye-bye. Everything but your name. Sure, I understand. And I also understand his point of, you know, I want to take up his side for a moment. Because what he's saying is right, you know, and the kind of what people demand of you sometimes is not a request but a demand. And he's saying, what about the daughter? Maybe we should pay attention to the parents' demands as well. He does make a point there, but he does carry a big chip. 212-209-2900, Armand DeMille, let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand, this is Jennifer.
Hello, Jennifer.
I was curious what you had to say about the type of personality that can't receive anything. They're always trying to give to the underdog and overextending themselves, and how that kind of fit into a selfish model in some kind of backwards way.
Oh, well, how about a selfless model?
Mm.
You know, how about, Jennifer, how about a person, you mean you, right?
No, actually, I was thinking about somebody else.
A man or a woman?
A woman.
A woman who you know, who just becomes like a dish rag?
Yeah.
Like becomes a doormat?
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't have any identity? See, some people believe that the only way they could get any identity is to surrender to the identity of another person. Mm. So they believe that if I have no will of my own, you will value me. And I guarantee you she grew up with parents who taught her that. I feel sad for her, you know. Is she a friend of yours?
A little bit closer than a friend, but yeah.
A little closer than a friend, like a lover?
No, like a relative.
Like a relative of yours. And do you care about her a great deal?
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, so there's a great difficulty. You have no way of extending your hand to her, except to try to preach to her, and she doesn't want to be preached to.
Mm-mm.
So you just let her know how much she cares to you, she matters to you, you know, and you let her know that she has an identity. But from what you're talking about, it's pretty serious damage. What does she frustrate in you?
It's frustrating to see people take advantage of her and her not recognize it.
Okay, so who in your family takes advantage of her?
Not so much people in the family, but people outside the family.
And how do they take advantage of her? What way would they be? Take her money? Take her sex?
Yeah, a lot of money issues. Yeah, she just kind of hires the wrong people and just sticks with them, even though she sees that they're not doing right by her.
Yeah.
So yep. Taking on charity cases, kind of, and it just being really to her own disadvantage.
And the reason that it is impacts on you is because you care for her?
Mm-hmm.
And do you also care about the money?
Not so much about the money, but I guess it represents something to me.
Like what?
I guess I kind of attach some kind of self-value to it, you know, that she's not recognizing that these people are aren't being respectful towards her. And I just see it as like them walking all over her.
Let me ask you something about yourself, Jennifer. Have you ever felt like people were walking over you?
There have been times where I felt like I wasn't in the best kind of relationship with somebody.
And you let people do that to you as well?
I think I recognize it and can distance myself from people like that.
You know what happens sometimes, Jennifer? We very often are most irked by a characteristic in another person that we have laying latent inside of ourself.
Mm.
So in other words, maybe the part of your cousin or the part of your relative that gets you the most is that in many ways you're just like her.
Mm.
That there's a piece of you that, you know, has been fooled and taken advantage of, and you just like can't stand that part of yourself, and you see it in her as well.
Mm.
You might take a look at that.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Jennifer, thank you for calling.
All right, bye-bye.
212-209-2900. And to all you listeners, be sure to tune in tomorrow from 1 to 3 o'clock when I will be presenting you with information and trying to get you to give a little to the station, this incredible station that has brought you a great deal of truth and freedom. One more call. Hi there, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille. Hello there, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes.
Maybe you're on the air.
Turn down your radio, please.
Okay, I did.
Good.
Hello?
Yes, you're here. Talk.
Okay. Hi, Armand.
Hello.
I like your show. Wonderful show. And thank you very much. Great service. I have a question regarding a child. I have a 4-year-old child. I have another one who is 2 years old. And my concern is about my child, that he is being very manipulative, you know, he wants his way. And my concern is that if he develops like that, then he might have problems in his school, with the teacher and all that.
Yes.
So
now, yes. Are you frustrated in turning him down? And what happens when he gets angry? Does he cry? Does he get upset?
Yeah, he cries. You know, he started, putting his feet, you know, like tapping his feet on the floor and things like that. And sometimes he shouts too. And I try to make sure that, you know, he feels loved and his needs are met and all that. But I don't want him to, you know, be, you know, like so self-absorbed and self-centered, where he's very manipulative and he doesn't listen.
How old is he now?
He's 4 years and less than 3 months.
Yeah. So it's something to keep an eye on, because it may be that there are things inside him that need attending. You know, he could be feeling a great deal of pressure inside himself. And the more he could talk to you about what he feels, as opposed to you telling him what he should feel, the more he could talk to you, the better it is. And if maybe you don't have the equipment to talk to him, maybe you got to get somebody else to talk to him, you know, because it could be helpful to him.
I see.
Okay, I wish you a lot of luck. If there's any kind of help I could do for you, be sure to get in touch with me.
Thank you very much.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for calling in. This is Armand DeMille with you at the Positive Mind on WBAI 99.5 FM. We're going to be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. for a two-hour extended program. Be sure to tune in. Copy of today's program can be reheard on thepositivemind.com or on WBAI.org. Send me an email, armand@brainlink.com.
Look in the eyes of the face of love. Look in her eyes, for there is peace. No, nothing dies within your light. Only one hour of this pure love to last a life of 30 years.
President George W. Bush has acted in a manner contrary to his trust as president and has subversive a constitutional government to the prejudice.